This is Basketball Central on Sportsnet 650 with Marcus Fitzgerald.
Turn me up a little bit. Just what's been on my mind. That's that Northeast Groove sample right there.
Tuesday Night Basketball Central. How you doing? Marcus Fitzgerald with you on the home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650. As always, you can find this show on Sportsnet 650, but also online at our website, sportsnet.ca/650. You can also catch us the day after on the Sportsnet app. Busy show coming up. Dieter Kurtenbach, Golden State Warriors beat with the San Jose Mercury News, East Bay Times. He's going to join us in a few minutes to talk about the Golden State Warriors. And obviously, they're not the same team they were just a few short years ago. They've been struggling. They play the Milwaukee Bucks tonight. Again, we're taping this on a Tuesday afternoon. They have lost three in a row. They have lost 7 of 10. I don't expect them to beat Milwaukee tonight. Maybe they do, but even if they did, I don't think that would change anything right now. You've got a guy in Steph Curry who was an all-world talent still, and it's an organization that doesn't quite know which way it's headed. Do they commit to Stephen Curry? Do they lean towards the youth? Do they play James Wiseman more than they have been? I don't know. They're in a rough spot. So we're going to ask Dieter Kurtenbach about that. We'll try to figure that out. Also, Aaron Rose is going to join us in the second half of the show. He covers the Toronto Raptors for Sports Illustrated. Kind of going with a 2019 NBA Finals, where are they now, what happens now kind of deal. That's kind of our theme for the show tonight. He's going to join us in segment number two. We're going to talk about Gary Trent Jr., who's offered some nice returns already in the trade for Norm Powell at the deadline. Kyle Lowry is obviously still sticking around. What do they do? Also, the Raptors are looking at a play-in spot potentially, and if they do get in, maybe they're only 10th in the Eastern Conference. So do they compete for that when it really doesn't matter? Even if you win the play-in, you're just going to get dummied by the Brooklyn Nets anyway? Or do you tank the rest of the season and try to get in on a loaded draft class, especially in the top half? Jalen Suggs, Cade Cunningham, Evan Mobley. Is that what you want to see? If you are a Raptor fan, I know there are some Raptor fans out in Vancouver. Would you want to see that from the Raptors organization? Which direction should they go? So it's kind of like the direction show. You take the 2019 finals, you take those two teams, and you try to figure out where those teams are headed. And we're going to start with the Golden State Warriors because it is a bit of a mess in Golden State this season. You have Steph Curry, but Klay Thompson obviously is not in the lineup. Draymond Green is not nearly as effective without Klay Thompson on the floor. And when Steph Curry sits, this team is brutal. They're not fun to watch at all. It's just a bench full of 10th men on any other NBA roster, and maybe James Wiseman gets in a little bit. And that's it. And you've got a head coach in Steve Kerr who's used to success, and he wants to build a system similar to what Greg Popovich did in San Antonio. But at this rate, they have had one lost season, and they are headed for a second lost season with Steph Curry on their roster. I don't know how much longer you can do that in the Bay. Steph is eligible to sign an extension this summer. If he doesn't, I expect him to, but if he doesn't, then he goes into next season, final year of his deal. And then we can wring our hands and talk about where Steph's headed for 8 straight months. Again, I don't think that's what it's going to lead to, but it could happen. It could happen. I expect Steph to re-sign in Golden State. He's a little like Dame Lillard that way. He's very loyal. I don't expect him to leave. That building in San Francisco, it is the house that Steph built. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, you can't help but not think about it. You look at that cap sheet. One more year after this year, that's it, with Steph Curry in Golden State. What if he decides that there's something else out there for me? What if he, you know, goes the LeBron route and realizes that, hey, maybe Bob Myers and Joe Lacob, maybe Steve Kerr, maybe they can't get it done for me? Because he's not getting any younger. And when you have a top five all-world talent on your roster, you have to maximize that. That's what LeBron teams do. What does LeBron do when he shows up in your organization? You get the guys around him that he needs. You get those guys paid. Chances are you're going to win a championship. And then the bill comes due afterwards. But the Warriors are in a very unique spot in that the bill has basically come due for all the success they just had for the last 5 years. But if they play it right, if they do it smart, they could have another 3 or 4 year window. Joining me right now on Basketball Central, he has been on these airwaves before. You can find his work at the Mercury News, the Bay Area Times, KNBR, the Locker Room app. He's all over the place. He's Dieter Kurtenbach, and he joins us now Dieter, I wanted to have you on the show today because the Golden State Warriors are in a bit of a strange flux period right now. I was talking about, you know, what they should really consider as to who they are and who they are on a big picture scale. Do they prioritize surrounding Steph with the best talent they can find? Or do they, as Steve Kerr suggested earlier this season, not chase wins and develop? I know in your column today, you kind of looked at that on a, you know, for right now kind of thing. I'm looking big picture. Where do you think the Warriors are at and what do you think they should do? Because I'm not sure what the clear answer is.
Well, I think that there has been a clear answer by the fact that we're at this juncture with the Warriors where they're a sub 500 team. You could argue they're the worst team in the NBA when Stephen Curry is not playing, not just when he misses time, when he's just on the bench, they're egregiously bad. They have not done a good job in putting together a competent NBA team around a still transcendent superstar. And a lot of that has to do with their goal, which has been ill-fated to this point, of developing young players. They're trying to have their cake and eat it too. Steve Kerr, obviously a disciple of Greg Popovich from their days back in San Antonio. And the Warriors have come up with this sort of grand notion that they will contend for championships in the here and now while also developing in the same way that San Antonio did. And that Steph Curry, who Steve Kerr is often called the little Tim Duncan, will be in fact a little Tim Duncan. And I think we're seeing right now with the Warriors, and it's early days yet in sort of that grand scale, but it is bad early returns. We're seeing with the Warriors how difficult it is to pull that off. The Warriors could neither develop nor win this year. So they need to have a come to Jesus moment. They need to have a come to Steph Curry moment about what it is they're about, because it's fairly evident, even though James Wiseman just turned 20, and it feels so aggressive and unfair to say that this kid isn't going to turn into a franchise cornerstone. I think he could be a very good player. I think he could be an all-star. But the ceiling perhaps isn't as high as many made it out to be. He is unquestionably delayed in his development for a multitude of reasons. And even factoring in those reasons, the Warriors are disappointed with where he's at in his development. They need to figure out if this sort of long-term plan is in any way feasible. And I keep thinking back to this. Steve Kerr is, yes, a disciple of Greg Popovich. And Pop was able to pull this off with incredible development. They did an exceptional job, obviously, with Kawhi Leonard and basically teaching him how to shoot. They went and found talent in places no one else was looking for talent. They changed the game in so many ways. I very much value my conversations back in the day with Steve regarding how the Spurs and the Miami Heat in those finals preceding the Warriors helped change the game. But Steve is also a disciple of Phil Jackson. And Phil Jackson has twice in his NBA coaching career, illustrious coaching career, seen the writing on the wall, seen that the good times were coming to an end, and bounced to Montana. And Steve Kerr has a really wonderful place in San Diego. He has an open invitation from TNT and ESPN to jump back into the broadcasting booth. I don't think it's imminent by any stretch, but he might be more Phil Jackson than he is Greg Popovich. And all three are great coaches, but Steve needs to probably have a conversation with himself and with the Warriors brass that this isn't working. He didn't really sign up for what's going on right now. And it's clearly not going to get that much better, even if you add in a summer league and a preseason before next season. They need to figure out what it is that they're about, and they need to kind of do it at the end of this season so they can get some momentum going for the next season with whatever track they choose.
Well, that is fascinating because, I mean, the bill is clearly coming due after all the success, Dieter, that they had from 15 to 19, and nobody knows that better than Steve Kerr. I mean, we literally a year ago watched a documentary about it. Right. You know, Steve's in a place where he may have to make a decision, but to bring it back to a Vancouver thing and try to, you know, localize it here, we've kind of seen this here with the Vancouver Canucks, and that it's never really a rebuild, but it's always a retool.
Yes.
Why do you think it is that they've vacillated so much between win now and also play James Wiseman and develop him at the same time?
Because they keep forgetting that they have to do the other thing, and the things are hard, and the things don't necessarily just, you know, slide into place efficiently. They have to scratch and fight and claw to just win NBA games. And every minute that James Wiseman on the court is somewhat excruciating to watch because he's a sharp kid. I want to be very clear about this. He's a really smart guy. And I think that he's going to be successful both in basketball and anything that he does off the court. But he is a square peg in a round hole right now, man. He does not fit this Warriors offense one iota. And he is a 20-year-old center in the NBA. He is getting picked on left and right. That's always been the case. That's been the case for decades in the NBA. You can only imagine how painful it is to watch in this 5-out 3-point era of basketball where everybody is 7'2" wingspans and the ability to touch the top of the backboard. It is tough to watch, and he gets down on himself. And so then it only adds to sort of the level of sadness that permeates everything the Warriors do right now. It's just a really tricky spot for them to be in. I guess the bonus is that whichever path that they choose moving forward, whether that is we're going in on the young guys and we are just going to see how far Steph and Draymond and Clay and Andrew Wiggins, I mean, you mentioned the bill coming due. Literally, the bill on those guys is bigger than most NBA team roles in general. That puts them in the luxury tax right there. And they're paying more money for this team than anyone has ever paid for a team in the history of the NBA. For this team, that's 4 games under .500 as we talk. It is just egregious. And I'm not here to count Joe Lacob's money. He's made a ton of it in the salad days of the Warriors. But man, I wouldn't blame the guy for not wanting to write those checks. Nevertheless, you still have Steph playing at this MVP level, which I'll admit I didn't see coming. You still have Draymond capable of affecting the game in ways that really only Draymond Green can. Now, he's slipping, but he hasn't slipped as far as most people who aren't watching the games want to make it out to be. Wiggins has played a lot better. Sorry to bash a Canadian here, but he's Andrew Wiggins. We know what he is by now. He's been very good on the defensive side, but he is a number three at best. He's played like a number one, and he was drafted number one. And we have no idea what Klay Thompson is going to be, but Klay Thompson, in theory, should be one of the guys who can come back from this kind of catastrophic leg injury back-to-back that he just had and be able to still be effective, though unlikely that he'll ever be his old self. They might think, hey, we add in another guy. We go out and we get a guy. Of course, Kevin Durant's not available, but we kind of do that same thing that we did back in 2016. We go get a Bradley Beal. We put all of our chips in the middle of the table and we say, we're going for it. We got a chance to actually get it. And on the flip side of that, they might say, let's see what these guys can do. Let's see what they can ride for us. And in the meantime, let's make sure that Wiseman is getting a ton of attention. Let's make sure that we're fitting systems for James Wiseman's skill set, which is something that I don't think Steve Kerr has done very well. And I can't blame him. It's not like the system wasn't great for 5 years and changed the entire NBA. It'd be pretty tough to give that up for some 20-year-old. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, pragmatism does have to come through. Let's build around Wiseman. We have Minnesota's pick coming up either as it's top three protected this year. So either as a number 4 or 5 or whatever this year, I think it's just 4 or 5 of the options, or as an unprotected in 2022. If we continue to stink this year, and if they go all in on developing Wiseman, trust me, they'll continue to stink this year. We're going to have another nice draft pick that we can put together. Maybe we can develop those guys into a future core, and maybe Steph can hold this thing together just long enough so that those guys are now 24, 25, 26, and they can take up the mantle. Maybe not immediately championship contention, but they're in a position to take the Warriors to the next level when Steph is fading out. A lot of that, of course, relies on Andrew Wiggins playing at a higher level. He's sort of the bridge generation there, which is a dangerous proposition in and of itself. They don't have a bad option, but they need to pick one because right now they are not appeasing the necessities of either of those two things. Steph doesn't have enough help to win games and compete for championships right now, full stop. And James Wiseman and whomever's coming after him are certainly not being developed well enough to think that they're ever going to reach their potential. I don't think that this coaching staff, which we have to remember was brought together to take Mark Jackson's team, which was good, and make it great, and did that in year one. I don't think this coaching staff is equipped to do it. They never saw last year and their egregious season coming. They just didn't see it coming. They really didn't even see Kevin Durant leaving. So a lot of this is them having to learn on the fly, but there have been some harsh lessons that are being taught. And again, they need to all get together and understand what it is that they're about, because right now they are floating in the ether, and that is the worst place to be in the NBA.
Dieter Kurtenbach joining us on Basketball Central. Dieter, you mentioned Steph. I kind of see him as a Dame type in that he's probably going to stay. I mean, I know that Brian Windhorst kind of half jokingly, you know, suggested that LeBron is recruiting him and all this stuff, and the memes and the photos on Twitter are popping up. Do you think Steph has the trust in Bob Myers and the rest of that crew that, hey, if I sign, and he's eligible to re-sign that extension this offseason,
yes,
you know, if I do this, will you help me out? Do you think he trusts the front office enough moving forward? Or do you see a scenario where Steph could say, you know what, this isn't working, I have to try something else?
Well, I'll say this. Steph will make any sort of decision like that well after he's signed the largest contract in NBA history, which he will do this upcoming summer with the extension. He'll take the money. He'll take the brand, the loyalty. He built this franchise. Joe Lacob, of course, deserves a lot of credit. Steve Kerr, Bob Myers, a lot of people, Rick Welts, the president, a lot of people deserve a lot of credit for turning the Warriors from legitimate NBA laughing stock and literally the only thing keeping them from being the absolute number one laughing stock was a team whose greatest moment in the modern basketball era was winning as an 8 seed. Like that's what they were about before Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Steve Kerr got together with Draymond Green and said, let's make something happen here. He built it. He turned them into a $6 billion juggernaut from a $600 million franchise, which was frankly overvalued at the time. He's the reason Chase Center exists in San Francisco. He is the foundation by which all of this success is built. And so he's not going to leave that behind. He feels an incredible loyalty. There is obviously an incredible deference given to him in all things. He doesn't take advantage of that deference far enough. And so to answer the question directly, yes, I do believe that he has faith in Bob Myers and Steve Kerr and the front office and ownership and all that. I don't know if he should, though. This has been a masterclass in how to waste the prime of a superstar player by the Warriors front office and coaching staff, if we're being honest. It has been tough to watch. They're not good at basketball. There's no nice way to say that. And Steph Curry is still absolutely spectacular, but he is frustrated. I mean, he was seething in a way that, you know, Steph Curry still somehow family friendly. He was seething in his post-game press conference after they lost to Atlanta. This team is lost, and Steph Curry is the only light that can be found. And yet the Warriors don't seem to be going towards that light and saying, Steph, what is it we should do? Steph, how can we help you most? And if we have to trade James Wiseman, if we have to trade this Minnesota pick so that we can help you more, so be it. And we joke about the LeBron recruitment of Steph. I'd recruit the guy too. If I'm a team in the NBA, I am tampering like hell to get Stephen Curry in there, because he still has a couple of years left of his prime, and his prime is truly spectacular. He is a one-of-a-kind player. He can change any franchise that he goes to, even if he slides down to a number two or number three role, given the preponderance of talent that we currently have in the league. He stays, though, and it will be interesting to see how the Warriors respond to that action. Will they view it as a vote of confidence? Will they see it as... because Steph won't say anything. That's just not how he is. Will they see it as a vote of confidence that, hey, everything that we've done up until this point is A-okay? Or will they feel the impetus, the pressure to go ahead and say, let's push our chips to the middle of the table, and if it burns out at the end, so be it. We're the Golden State Warriors, and we will figure it out. That's the model that I would go to. I would say you try to maximize every minute that you have with Stephen Curry, because there's no player who's even remotely close to Stephen Curry coming through the door after him. And I don't care how talented you think Wiseman is. I don't care if they get Jalen Suggs from Gonzaga. There is one Stephen Curry, and if not for Wilt Chamberlain, he's the greatest player in Warriors history in a unanimous decision. He is one of the greatest players of all time. He has changed the game in ways that very few players in any sport can attribute to themselves. So He is one of a kind, and they need to maximize every minute, because he is holding up his end of the bargain right now by still playing at an MVP level. And I often think to just the brilliance of LeBron James, when his career is over, I'm not sure what we're going to think of him as a Cav, a Miami Heat member, right, a right. Laker. But when LeBron, much like Phil Jackson, saw the writing on the wall and it was starting to burn out, and he's having to take Smush Parker and guys to, you know, he's having to start J.R. Smith in the NBA finals. When he saw the writing on the wall, he bounced. He didn't stick around for mediocrity. He didn't suffer in silence like Steph is doing. And I think it's genius. And clearly it set a trend around the NBA, good or bad. It is here and it's here to stay. I'm hoping that Steph, for his own sake, just for his own sake, decides to be a little bit more like LeBron. Maybe those conversations, that's the thing that permeated through at the All-Star game. A little bit more like LeBron and put his foot down and say, I'm the reason we're here. I'm the reason we're in this building. I'm the reason there are banners in the rafters, and I want to put more in there, and you're going to make it happen right here and right now, and consequences be damned on the back end of it, because we're going to win so much, you're going to forget that there is an end of this thing.
Well, I'll let you out on this one, and it's a good last question because naturally it's loaded. How much of Clay are we getting next season? Are we getting all of Clay, some of Clay? How much can we expect when he does come back from what have been two pretty catastrophic injuries?
I think it'd be fair to say it's going to be more than 50% of Clay. It would be very difficult for me to say anything more than about 85%. Of course, all of these numbers are completely arbitrary and made up. The way I break it down is this: I'm concerned about his explosion. I'm concerned about the athleticism. And a lot of people have made the argument to me, well, Dieter, Clay was not that athletic of a player beforehand. I mean, he had a dunk contest throughout the year with Zaza Pachulia that Zaza won one year. So it's not as if his game is predicated on touching the sky. At the same time, my argument is, okay, so his entire game wasn't built on explosion. What happens when he loses some of the explosion that he has? And we've seen this countless times. I mean, we just go down the list. Great NBA players lose a step or two. Hell, look at Draymond Green. Great NBA players lose a step or two. And yes, they are still capable of playing, but they're shells of their former selves, and they're having to get crafty and find new ways to affect the game. Clay could very well be just the world's greatest catch and shoot guy, a Kyle Korver type. My concern with Clay, and he'll get his points and he'll be an asset, he'll space the floor. It won't be that bad, even in the worst case scenario on the offensive side, though I do think it could look pretty rough on some nights, and we're all keeping our fingers crossed that it won't. My concern is this is the guy who's supposed to guard the other team's point guard, because that's not a responsibility you want on Steph Curry. And I doubt that he can do that moving forward. And that is going to be a big issue for the Warriors, because defense still wins championships, and Draymond's lost a step, and Steph is getting older, and now you got Klay Thompson on two bad legs out there trying to stop a Kyrie Irving, trying to stop a Chris Paul, even in his advanced age, you know, trying to stop all these brilliant point guards, all these guys who can do so much with the ball in their hands in this era of basketball. That is a dangerous proposition, and Klay never got the respect that he deserved for his lockdown defense, even in the games where he was scoring points left and right, game six Clay, stuff like that. It was his lockdown defense that was just as important to the Warriors in their championship runs. And I very much fear, hope I'm wrong, because everybody loves Clay. Even Rockets and Cavs fans and Lakers fans love Clay Thompson. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm wrong, but I think that Clay is beyond us. And I'm not really sure what that Clay is moving forward, except for kind of a depressing watch and probably a guy who's going to need a couple of guys alongside him to help him kind of carry the load that he once carried single-handedly.
That is Dieter Kurtenbach. He covers the Golden State Warriors for the Mercury News. You can find him on Twitter at Dieter, D-I-E-T-E-R, and he is one of the best. Coming up, Aaron Rose is going to join us from Sports Illustrated, covers the Toronto Raptors, talk about the Warriors and which direction they're headed. What about Toronto? Do they tank? Do they try to win? To try to get into a play-in spot in the Eastern Conference. Where do they go? We'll talk about that and more coming up. You've got it on Basketball Central on Sportsnet 650.
Basketball Central continues on Sportsnet 650 with your host, Marcus Fitzgerald.
Basketball Central on a Tuesday night. Marcus Fitzgerald with you. How you doing? Great to have you with us. We're doing the show once again from home in Port Coquitlam, as we've been doing for the last year, over a year now. But it is a beautiful day in Port Coquitlam, and we're excited to be back on the air with you tonight. Thanks again to Dieter Kurtenbach for joining us a little earlier, trying to figure out what's going on with the Golden State Warriors and where they're at right now. Again, we're taping this on a Tuesday afternoon. They play the Milwaukee Bucks tonight. Even if they beat Milwaukee, they probably won't, but even if they did, we know it's not going to change anything big picture. They have to decide which direction they are headed in right now. Yes, they will get Klay Thompson back next year, but as I asked Dieter, what type of version of Klay Thompson are we going to get? Coming back from an Achilles injury is not easy. We saw what happened to Kobe Bryant. Kevin Durant came back from an Achilles injury this season, has had stretches where he's played well, but we also haven't seen Kevin Durant on the court for quite a while. Now, the Nets continue to win without him anyway, and we may see him back very soon, but it remains to be seen how this is going to affect Klay, because not only is he coming back from the Achilles injury, he's also spent the last year and a bit rehabbing, you know, his knee problem as well. And this is a guy who has been asked to guard the other team's best player, and Klay has come up publicly and said, when I come back next season, I'm not necessarily going to be that guy. It's going to be a wait-and-see approach. And these are all things that Steph Curry has to think about and consider. Again, like Dieter said in that first segment, in case you missed it, he expects Steph Curry to take the money and stay in Golden State. I do think that Curry is wired kind of like Dame Lillard in Portland. He's a loyal guy. He wants to stay. As Dieter said in that first segment, the reason the Chase Center exists in San Francisco right now is because of Stephen Curry. That's his house. He built it, and he understands his, I guess, importance to that franchise. And, of course, from the Warriors' standpoint, you know, the value that Steph Curry offers to that team is just astronomical. They know that. They're absolutely going to offer Steph every penny under the sun for him to stay for the next 5 years. There's no doubt about that. But, as, again, Dieter also said in that first segment, what if Steph acted like LeBron a little bit? What if Steph sees the writing on the wall? What if he doesn't have the trust of Bob Myers and Joe Lacob and Steve Kerr in, you know, turning this thing around in Golden State? Because if you're going to do that, you're the Warriors, then you package James Wiseman up. You package up that Minnesota draft pick that's top three protected and unprotected the following year if it does land in the top three this summer in what will be a loaded draft. You package that up. You package that up and figure out the rest later. The Lakers may be banged up right now. LeBron may be out. Anthony Davis may be out. They picked Ben McLemore up off the scrap heap to add some more shooting. They're falling down the standings. Who knows? There could be a situation where the Lakers get to a play-in spot because Bron and AD haven't been healthy. But you know what? They won that championship because they pushed their chips to the table. That's how you win in the NBA these days. We've talked about that on this show, as my mouth gets ahead of my brain, so many times. That's how you win in the league today. Milwaukee, 3 first-round picks for Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday re-signs in Milwaukee, 4 years, $160 million last week. Giannis has his best two guys. He's got Middleton. He's got Drew Holiday, and now the Bucks are all in. There you go. The Bucks could very well get to the NBA Finals this summer. They very well could. They very well could figure that out. They know which direction they're going. The Warriors do not, and another team in the Eastern Conference, we have to figure out which direction they are headed. And I speak of the Toronto Raptors, who have now played 6 games with Gary Trent Jr. Since the trade deadline, they move Norm Powell out. They bring Gary Trent Jr. in. Gary Trent Jr. hits a game winner the other night against the Washington Wizards. Nice little story. They play the Lakers this afternoon. Again, we're taping this on a Tuesday. Joining us right now to talk about the Raptors and that direction they're headed in is Aaron Rose from Sports Illustrated. Aaron, thanks so much for doing this. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Well, now that the dust has settled from the deadline, we've seen some games since then. And you know, it's a small sample size, but how has the performance of Gary Trent Jr. looked in your eyes to this point? I mean, he hit the buzzer beater the other night to beat the Wizards, but he's looked pretty impressive in the trade with Norm Powell over these first 6 games here.
Well, those first 2 games, I want to say 2 or 3 games, he did not look good. His 3-point shooting was all sorts of off, and he was sort of lost offensively, and his defense has sort of always been mediocre. But since those first handful of games, he's been really, really lights out. He's shooting the ball like he did in Portland. And we saw the other night, he hit that pull-up game-winning 3, something the Raptors have not gotten all season. So as he learns the sets, that's still coming. That's something Nick Nurse has talked about, how he's still trying to figure out what the Raptors like to run and when they like to run it and where he should stand. And that probably is why he was struggling in those first couple of games. But ever since then, he's really showing that sort of offensive firepower. And the reason the Raptors acquired him to replace someone like Norman Powell is because he can score a bucket, especially from 3-point range, with a pretty good ease.
Well, and that's the thing with Gary Trent. I mean, I got a friend who's a Raptor fan, and when that deal went down, he's trying to tell me that, you know, maybe that's not the best move they could have made. But I mean, I saw Gary Trent Jr. in Portland, and he may not be like a 20 a night scorer, but kind of like you said, every once in a while, he's going to go off and he'll give you 25. He'll give you 30. Now, the Raptors may not be a playoff team this year. They would probably just be a play-in team at best. But in a scenario where you're in the postseason, I think you would want a guy like Gary Trent Jr. because you would want, you know, a guy who can be a wild card in a big spot, maybe give you 25 to 30 on a night when, you know, Siakam doesn't have it or Fred VanVleet doesn't have it. I feel like he could be a really good, irrational confidence playoff guy for this team. Maybe not this year, but going forward, if they decide to re-sign him.
It sounds like you're describing playoff Powell, a guy you never knew on any given night could come off the bench when he was coming off the bench for the Raptors and go off for 20, 30 points or whatever it was. And that's something that somebody else may not have it, but when you have a guy like that who can sort of heat up out of nowhere, that can be a difference maker and that can sway a series. When you're talking about winning, somebody has to win four games. Just having a guy come off the bench or you know, one of the guys you're not counting on to score a bunch, score 30 or 20, 30 points in the game and sway a game, that could sway a whole series. And I think that's what you're talking about. And then the other thing he brings is because he's such a lethal 3-point shooter, he really spaces the floor for the Raptors. And that's something they've struggled with this season, not really having a center who can space the floor very well, with Aaron Baines struggling in front to shoot the 3-pointer. But because Gary Trent Jr. can shoot so well, it's opening things up for some of the other guys. Now, that's something Norman Powell did. And certainly as teams realized that he was such a lights out shooter, they had to adjust. But that opens things up for Pascal Siakam. And as we see OG Anunoby start to create a little bit more off the dribble and Fred VanVleet attacking and Kyle when he's healthy, having a guy that defenses have to respect and have to stay close to on the perimeter, that really opens things up for the Raptors inside. And that's one of those difference makers that doesn't necessarily show up in the box score, but that'll help the Raptors going forward for a very long time.
Well, the fact, Aaron, that the Raptors moved on from Norm Powell would suggest that, you know, they weren't going to re-sign him this offseason. Was there ever a point, though, where Masai or Bobby Webster decided, hey, Norm is a guy that we need back? Like, was there something that changed along the line that kind of changed your thinking and made them think, okay, we may not be able to re-sign this guy, so we better get something for him? Did that happen quickly, or was that like a low simmering thought in the Raptors front office that we might have to move Norm at the deadline here?
I think it has to do with two things. Number one is Norman Powell was playing his way out of potentially opting into his player option and was playing into a massive contract. He'll probably get something in the neighborhood of $20 million.
Yeah.
And then obviously with the Raptors struggling this season, and at the time it didn't look like they were going to make the playoffs. And frankly, it still doesn't look like that, maybe a play-in spot, but because they're not contenders this year, they realize they don't need him for the rest of the season. And I think the question they had to ask is, do they want to pay him $20 million and add him to that core with OG Anunoby, Fred VanVleet, and Pascal Siakam, commit so much money to him, especially for long-term, when he's a guy that, as we know, he can score from anywhere on the court and he's a lights-out shooter, but he doesn't bring that defensive intensity that the Raptors have looked for in their guys. So he's sort of a one-dimensional or a guy who's really good on one end of the court, but can't do it so much on the other end of the court. And if you're committing so much money to a guy, that might be a flaw you don't want to commit to. And especially the Raptors, we know their defensive value, how much they value that end of the court. So I think they just decided they weren't going anywhere this season, so that they could take a step back and get a younger guy and trade a guy that they decided, as you mentioned, they probably weren't going to pay $20 million for. So once the Raptors had their COVID-19 issues and they started going into their losing streak, Norman Powell really stepped up. He started playing really, really well, and he priced himself out and the Raptors started losing. So I think it was a combination of those two things. Sort of, when was that? In early March, when those things started happening, I imagine that's when the front office sort of decided to pivot and eventually move on from Norman Powell.
The front office is going to have to make a decision on Gary Trent as well. Do you think they're concerned at all of, you know, the optics? Maybe they don't re-sign Gary Trent. Is re-signing Gary Trent a top priority for the front office going into the offseason? We know that they need a center. We know that. But is Gary Trent high on that list?
I think I've heard the number $20 million floated around. I know Chris Haynes from Yahoo reported that. And I had spoken to a Trailblazers reporter over at SI, and he said that he thinks the difference between what Norman Powell is going to make and what Gary Trent Jr. Will make this season, this offseason as a restricted free agent, is going to be surprisingly small, that they're both lights out 3-point shooters. They're both highly efficient scorers, and that the difference between them might just be $1 million or $2 million annually. So I'm not sure the Raptors really are going to save that much money, which is an interesting reason for the trade. But if you, as you mentioned, if they don't re-sign him and they lose Rodney Hood, who was sort of probably just salary filler in that trade, they really got nothing for Norman Powell. So I would imagine, as you mentioned, it would be really bad optics if they didn't re-sign Gary Trent Jr. That being said, we know Giannis Antetokounmpo was off the board. I don't know. There's not really another big move. Maybe they trade for somebody like Bradley Beal. You know, that name has been mentioned as connected to the Raptors. But unless they're going to make a big move, they have to re-sign him. So I don't know where that money would be allocated to. But I think it's probably right up there with whatever they're going to do with Kyle Lowry. But Gary Trent Jr. right now seems like a member of this core group of young players moving forward. So I would imagine he sticks around for the years to come. It just might be something shockingly close to what Norman Powell was going to make or is going to make this summer.
Aaron Rose of Sports Illustrated joins us. Aaron, we talk about optics and you mentioned Kyle Lowry there. Does Kyle walk for nothing, or do you see a sign and trade situation this offseason?
I guess the other option is he could come back and then we do this sort of dance again where the offseason rolls around and the Raptors still have his rights and either they're in a position to contend or they ship him away. And now you've got a year and a half for that contending team that's going to try and acquire Kyle Lowry. They still have a year and a half of his contract. So I wouldn't be surprised if he returned to Toronto either in a sign and trade form or signing long term, only because he can get the most money with the Raptors. The question is, does he want to stay here or does he want to go have a better chance of winning a ring? We haven't had a chance to speak to Kyle in a little while, and I would love to have an answer to that question. Why is he still with the Raptors? Did he think this was a chance to contend? Did he tell the front office, I want to get out of here and send me somewhere else? And they sort of didn't feel like the package was good enough to listen to what he had to say. We know that they wanted to really appease him because of what he's meant to this franchise, but I don't know why he's still here, because this team is probably not going deep in the playoffs. It doesn't look like that. He's injured right now. And when you look at his contract situation, you don't know how it doesn't make a ton of sense how he fits with this core going forward because of his age. He's 35 years old and he's probably a few years too old to be part of the Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, and now Gary Trent Jr. core. So I don't know what the Raptors will get back in terms of the signing trade. Probably not much, which I guess is why I've been so confused about why they didn't move him at the deadline, even if the deals weren't as attractive as they had hoped.
How loud is the desire to tank, Aaron?
Well, based on my polling on Twitter, it seems pretty big. I asked about a week ago, I guess exactly a week ago, the Raptors were in the middle of that March losing streak, and 75% of 1,000 Raptors fans, which obviously we know is a tiny sample size of Raptors Nation, but something like 75% said they wanted to tank. And my latest polling, this is not any sort of professional political poll, but my Raptors Twitter poll says it's something closer to, I want to say, 60% right now. Right. But I think even after two wins, the Raptors could have a few more wins coming up on the horizon, but the Raptors probably are not going to make a big run for the playoffs. They might squeak into a play-in tournament spot, but you've got to win two do-or-die games just to make it into the playoffs. And then you're looking at a team like the Brooklyn Nets or the 76ers, who the Raptors have beaten this year, but those are going to be really, really, really tough teams to knock off in a four-game playoff series.
Well, you know, the funny thing about asking a team to tank as a fan is the last time the Raptors wanted to do that was 2014. Not only didn't they tank, but the number one pick was Andrew Wiggins. And the Andrew Wiggins era hasn't exactly been up to par for the last 5, 6, 7 years. So sometimes it doesn't work. I mean, look, Evan Mobley could come in, Aaron, and fix everything. He could fix everything and fill all the holes the Raptors, you know, need. Or, you know, maybe they fall off so far they get like a Cade Cunningham or a Jonathan Kuminga or something like that. We know the players and coaches don't want to tank. I'm just, you know, concerned that do the Raptors know which direction they're going in? In your mind, do they still want to be that contender going into next season?
Well, I think if you look at what they did at the trade deadline, they traded away Norman Powell, but they kept Kyle Lowry. And if you look at that, you say, well, it looks like they're in between, right? They traded away one of their best players and they kept one of their best players in a move that you probably would have thought if they were trying to get higher lottery ball or more lottery odds, they would have traded away Kyle Lowry. So you're right. It seems like they're a team sort of without a direction. Now, nobody is ever going to say they're trying to tank. Nick Nurse basically scoffed at that question the other day, rightfully so, because he's the coach of the team. But they're a team that's sort of going to win a few games here and there. Now, I think when you look at the injury situation with this team, Kyle Lowry's out for a little while. Fred VanVleet's missing a couple games. And you might say these are guys who are getting a little bit of rest right now. And if they were in the thick of a playoff chase, and you know, this is maybe just speculation, but if they were in the thick of things, maybe these guys would be fighting through their injuries. This isn't to question their toughness or anything, but it's better for these guys. Let's make sure Kyle Lowry is healthy for free agency this summer, because that's important for him to get maximize his value. Let's make sure that Fred VanVleet is fully back from COVID-19. He's played almost like 40 minutes a night for a while now, and now he's dealing with an injury. Let's make sure he's okay. Let's get some of the development from guys like Malachi Flynn, who's looked very, very good as of late. So this isn't to say that they're sitting out for any particular reason, but let's make sure that they're 100% ready to come back, because, you know, if worst case scenario, we lose a couple of these games, then the Raptors get more lottery odds. They improve their chances of getting one of those top four picks in the draft, which are so, so, so valuable this season. So you look at things and they're winning it too many games. They had a big game win the other night against the Washington Wizards, which I think some fans of the tank would say probably shouldn't have won that game because of where the Wizards are just right behind or right in front of the Raptors in the lottery standing. So it's sort of a team with a very strange direction. I'm not totally sure what to say about where they're going right now.
Appreciate your time, Aaron. Thank you for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Aaron Rose from Sports Illustrated for joining us on Basketball Central. Covers the Toronto Raptors. Yeah, that's an interesting one. Where do the Raptors go? Do they tank? Do they compete for a play-in spot? And even if they get to a play-in spot, and even if they win the play-in tournament, well, guess who you get in the first round? You get either Philadelphia or Brooklyn. Maybe even Milwaukee. Is that worth it? Is that worth it in a season that's been a long one for the Raptors, displaced from their family in Toronto? COVID issues, injuries, trade deadline drama. I don't know. It almost feels like a lost year for the Raptors, quite frankly. And that's okay, because going forward, they've got the young core in place. Yes, they're going to have a decision to make on Kyle Lowry. I don't expect Lowry to be back this season. I would be surprised if he re-signed. Because why? Why do that if you're Toronto? You've even got Malachi Flynn at the backup point guard spot. He's shown some flashes here. He's started to figure things out. And don't forget with these rookies. I mean, we talked about James Wiseman off the top of the show with Golden State. You know, none of these rookies have had a traditional year by any stretch. No training camp, no summer league. These kids coming into the league now are so young anyway that they need that time to grow. And it's very hard to do that when you're being thrust really just into NBA games. Now, there's some guys where that's not the case. LaMelo Ball has been great from day one. Anthony Edwards is just starting to figure it out now. He's had a great stretch. It takes some time, and it takes, you know, more time for some guys than it does others. James Wiseman, he may be a year or two away. The Warriors need to make a decision on that. Malachi Flynn started to turn things around here after a rough start to the season. Maybe he offers them some value at the backup point guard spot, because next year, if you don't bring Lowry back, you're giving the ball to Fred VanVleet and you're passing the torch to him. I would much rather do that. Now, for the rest of this season, it's tough, because if you're a player, if you're a coach, you don't want to tank. Coaches never want to tank. All coaches want to do is win games. If you want to set yourself up for better lottery position, that's on, you know, the front office. You have to play the long game if you're going to do that. You have to be Sam Hinkie. You really do. Because you can't convince a group of professional athletes to lose on purpose. It's impossible. It always bothers me. I know fans bring it up because, you know, you don't want to be a treadmill team. So you either want to be a contender or you want to tank. Problem is, you can't convince professional athletes to purposely lose games. You just can't. You just can't. The only way to do that successfully is what Sam Hinkie did in Philadelphia. Literally trusting the process. And that begat them Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. And look at them now. One of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. And when they're healthy, a championship contender. That's how you tank successfully. Now, I wish for the Raptors' sake that they were a little further down the standings, because there's so much in this draft that could help them. You know they need a center. Evan Mobley would be the absolute perfect fit in Toronto. He'd be perfect in that spot. Could you imagine that, just hypothetically for a second, a core with Evan Mobley, Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet, OG Anunoby, Gary Trent Jr., if they re-sign him for less than it would have cost to re-sign Norm Powell? That's pretty good. That's pretty good. So you wish the Raptors were a little further down the standings. Even if they do tank, maybe they finish in a spot where they get the ninth pick. And I know the draft is deep, and they may find a gem. Masai's good at it if he re-signs. Bobby Webster can find talent. There's no doubt about that. Maybe they find a gem, but it might be a little too late to go full tank if you're going to get into the top five. And maybe they do. Who knows? Maybe the lottery balls bounce a little different. Maybe they get some luck after what's been a rough year in Tampa Bay. I do want to end with a couple thoughts on the NCAA championship game that was last night. A little anticlimactic. I was a little surprised that Gonzaga didn't complete the feat, because it's been such a strange year in sports. Strange things happen. That tournament was weird. You had favorites getting bounced left and right. Everybody's brackets were crumpled up by the end of the first day. So I just thought, you know what? It's been a crazy year. Maybe this is the time. Maybe this is the time we see an undefeated champion for the first time since Indiana in 1976. And it was very clear from like the first couple minutes of that game that Baylor was just going to be better. Because that very first possession, I believe it was, Baylor had about three offensive rebounds on that possession. And I thought, uh-oh, they're more physical than Gonzaga tonight. Baylor's more turned up tonight than Gonzaga is. Baylor was gassed up in a good way. Gonzaga was gassed up in a bad way. I think they were a little nervous. They were a little nervous. They were thinking about going unbeaten, and it affected them early. Jalen Suggs got those two early fouls, too. That happened, and I knew they were in trouble after that. And they did not shoot the ball well. Baylor did. And we had a bit of a surprise, and an anticlimactic surprise, because Baylor was dominant for 40 minutes last night. Gonzaga got it down to 10 at halftime. We just assumed, well, Gonzaga stunk that whole half. It's down to 10. They're probably going to come back and win this game. They never did. They didn't even come close. Didn't even sniff it. The closest they got was 9. That's it. That's it. What a dominant performance from the Baylor Bears. Credit to Davion Mitchell. Credit to Jared Butler. Credit to Scott Drew. That was a great show from minute 1 to minute 40 from a Baylor standpoint. Didn't help things in terms of entertainment, because they were in charge from the jump. But that was a pretty impressive performance. They were the stronger, better team last night. For Mark Few, who's been there 22 years, you feel for him a little bit, because he's taken that program and turned it into a power. Just this little school in Spokane, but everyone knows about Gonzaga basketball now. And that's too bad. They're going to have to continue to go back to the drawing board. You've got a lot of players on that roster who will probably go in the first round. A couple guys anyway. Jalen Suggs, Joel Yahi could be a first-round pick as well. I don't know where you stand on Drew Timmy, but maybe he could help an NBA team somewhere. I don't know that he goes in the first round, but maybe somebody takes a chance on him. Either way, Gonzaga will have to reload. And I have no doubt that they will still get top recruits, because that's what they do. That's what the powerhouses do. But, you know, it's frustrating when you get there, you get to the end, you have a chance, and you don't get it done. And that's kind of followed Gonzaga around over the last few years. And you hope that Mark Few breaks through, because he's been there for so long, and he will. I think he will one day, but it just wasn't their time last night, and it wasn't their time from the outset. That was the most surprising thing. My thanks to Dieter Kurtenbach. My thanks to Aaron Rose. Thanks to you for tuning in. This is Basketball Central, Sportsnet 650. We'll do it again in a week. Take care.